fitness, nutrition, sleep, longevity, performance, fat loss, and all the keys to a life of health, happiness, and success. I'm Jed Zimmer, your host, and welcome to The Health Project.
Welcome back to episode 53 today of The Health Project. It's great to be back as always. Another super exciting episode bringing to you guys tonight. It's back into the field of health and nutrition after a very exciting episode 52 where we actually had a local guest jump on board in Alan McGregor. And that feedback's certainly been nothing short of sensational. Alana's got an incredible story. She's the citizen of the year for 2022 in Bendigo, as you'll hear if you go back and listen to that episode. And she's doing some incredible things out there to raise awareness on suicide, and just getting out there and sharing her story is truly incredible because, she's someone that has had to overcome a lot of hurdles and adversity all throughout her life. So to be able to do what she's now doing and stem a lot of her passion into trying to educate others is awesome. So I really do encourage you and everyone to go back and listen to episode 52. But tonight we're jumping ship again to looking at things more from the health and the nutrition side of things, where we've got Dr. Justin Marchigiani from Massachusetts jumping on board. Justin, someone I was in communication with back and forth via a lot of emails all throughout COVID, sharing some information to one another. He sent across a lot of information to me, as initially the early stages were purely to get a book out there and have a book published. So it was super awesome to get on board with that, passing on a lot of information, but to now be able to sit down with Justin and have a more detailed conversation and get this podcast episode out there, it was awesome. So it's a really, really good episode talking about all things nutrition, talking about some of the diet trends and ketogenic diets, paleo diets, sort of how to optimize everything based on your goals and also based on, cycling between periods of feasting, consuming carbohydrates and so forth. And then we also finish off by addressing sort of hormones, adrenals, and pretty much ways that anyone can really look to optimize their hormone profile. So I really enjoyed chatting with Justin. Really fabulous episode. And as always, I look forward to being back for more episodes. First thing, nutrition. Let's talk about what's your philosophy in nutrition. Obviously, there's a lot of theories out there, low carb approaches, paleo, ketogenic. How do you think, what's the best approach to finding what works best for you?
Well, I like the approach of a paleo template. And I like the word template because it's macronutrient agnostic. We can totally dial in the protein, the fat, and carbs based on what your needs. And I like the paleo as kind of the preamble because, one, paleo kind of alludes to the fact that we're eating foods that we've been able to have time to evolutionarily adapt to. So keeping grains and processed sugars and refined, junky vegetable fats that we typically have not been exposed to in tens of thousands of years, right? So high quality protein sources, high quality fat sources, especially good, clean, saturated fats, good, clean omega-3s from high quality fish, those kind of things. And then the carbohydrate is really a mixed bag, okay? Right. We have people that come in that have metabolic damage, type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance. So we lean more to lower carb, or people that are more sedentary, more vegetable-based carbs, less fruit and starch. The people that are more CrossFit, healthy, more metabolically flexible, then we can add in more starch, more fruit. So we kind of have this foundational template, right? Nutrient dense, anti-inflammatory, low toxin. And then we dial in the macros for each individual. And of course, organic's a higher standard because you don't get the toxins and you get higher nutrient density per food item you eat.
So generally, as a general thumb, the more active, and I guess you say when towards the athletes, the more metabolic flexible you can be.
Correct. And the more you're, let's say, like a somatotype, like an ectomorph, taller, skinnier, kind of basketball player like, then you can tend to handle more carbohydrates. You're more insulin sensitive. And so that ectomorph, lean more to the carbs. The mesomorph's kind of the hybrid in between. And then the endomorph's the bigger, like football lineman type, easier to put on weight kind of thing.
Right. Just with the, while we've touched on it, just with the athlete side of things, Is there a time where a low carbohydrate approach will work best? Is this going to be something that you would advocate for endurance athletes
when do you think a low carbohydrate approach is actually suitable?
So I think it's Jeff Volek and Steve Finney. They've done some research out of UVM looking at cyclists, right? And trying to get them adapted to a higher, a lower carbohydrate, more ketogenic diet. And there's been good success. Other people have talked about that where in a CrossFit type of environment, they kind of bonk, if you will, that they need a little bit more carbohydrate. So I think people that do it successfully, they are more ketogenic overall. But then before an event, before some kind of a competition, they really load up the night before and that day to provide that extra carbohydrate that they can access during the event. So I think in training potentially, but during the more intense events, they're going to be carb loading and cycling in and out of that ketogenic state.
And that's what I want to touch on. When do you think, I know for myself personally, I save my carbohydrates for the evening. So I try and stay in a relatively state of ketosis throughout the day, then refuel at night. When do you think is the best approach? Is there a certain time that you should allow yourself for carbs? Is it evening? Is it morning? Or should it just be purely straight after a workout?
I think generally speaking, nighttime is excellent because of the carb backloading theory. There's a lot of good data on this. There's been studies where they've taken people and created an isocaloric diet and they fixed it for each group. And some groups, they spread it out over the day evenly, some all at night. Mm. One study on firefighters, they found people lost more weight when they took all their carbohydrates and stacked it at night. Now, that being said, if you're training and there's a performance kind of strategy and you're working out in the morning, well, I'm kind of on the fence there. I almost would supersede timing up carbs based on post-workout because of the spike in insulin that you can create with carbohydrate that would then open the muscles up for more amino acids. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of go in between, generally speaking, for the average person, probably more carb backloading at the end of the day. But for someone that has really strict training goals, I may deviate from that post-workout and if the workout's morning.
Right. And for those who are following a ketogenic approach, is this something they can sort of allow as well? I know for me, I've often wondered, by refueling with my carbs at night, am I going to be back into ketosis by the morning?
So I've interviewed Ben Greenfield on my podcast a few years back, and he was saying during his more intense exercise, he could get up to 200 to 300 grams of carbs a day and still be spitting out a fair amount of ketones. Mm. So the more active you are, the more carbohydrates you can handle and still spit off ketones. So think of your muscles like a big sponge. So about 80% of the reservoir for glucose is going to go to the muscles first. The last 20% will go to the liver. Once those areas are filled up, then you start filling up the liver and other areas with fat. Mm. And that's what really jacks up your insulin resistance, is when those carbohydrate areas are already full, and then now you're converting to palmitic acid and fat. So if you're burning glucose in your bloodstream by working out, now you're wringing out that sponge, which is the equivalent of burning up the glycogen, which is stored glucose in the muscle. Now you have a sponge that's totally wrung out that can now absorb more glucose.
Mm. Yeah, awesome. And with the athlete side of things, I know a lot of the work I do, a lot of my clients want to build muscle. And they often ask me, I've got a few are following a ketogenic approach. Where does muscle building fit into the equation? In terms of carbohydrate content, is this something that can be achieved on a ketogenic diet?
So it just depends, right? There's different phases and when you're working out. So you can't be growing and trying to get cut at the exact same time. If you really want optimal muscle growth, you're probably going to need a little bit more carbohydrate to improve performance and to increase muscle hypertrophy. But on the same standpoint, you may not be able to cut as much when you're having the higher carbohydrates. So usually there's going to be some kind of a phase, a growth phase, and then a cutting phase. But if you're just kind of a person in between, you could probably strike a good happy medium where you have enough carbohydrates in there where you perform well, but not so much where you're creating any level of insulin resistance. Mm.
And let's talk, what is the science between the carbohydrates? Obviously, there's that insulin spike. How is this damaging? Is it the inflammation? You want to just touch on the sort of the science behind how a high carbohydrate diet can be damaging?
So when you consume different types of carbohydrates, right, starches, they're going to break more down to glucose, right? Glucose can preferentially get stored more in the muscles. Fructose, right, especially more refined sugars that are more fructose-based, which is like a 55-45 blend, 55% fructose, 45% glucose, they're going to preferentially get stored in the liver. And like I mentioned, the liver has a much smaller storage ground for carbohydrate, about 60 to 80 grams, muscle 300 to 400 grams, depending on how big the muscle is. Once those areas are full, now your body's like, well, where the heck do I put it? So now it starts converting a lot of that glucose to fat. All right. And then this is what starts to create systemic insulin resistance, because your body's like, crap, the cells are starting to get numb because the glucose where it would normally get deposited in the muscles are all saturated. So now the cell starts getting numb and it needs more of an insulin signal or stimulus to open that cell door. And obviously now glycolysis or glycogenolysis is no longer an option, meaning storing glucose to glycogen, which is stored glucose in the muscle. Now it has to get involved in lipogenesis. So it has to switch on different enzymes that now lipogenesis means fat storing, fat forming. And that creates a down regulation in the receptor sites that require more insulin to get that process to happen. And so more insulin creates cells to grow. And in this situation, it's going to cause more fat cells to grow.
Outside of, let's just touch outside of nutrition, what are some things we can do to sort of stop this insulin spike? I know Ben Greenfield, who just touched on, he's a big advocate for cold thermogenesis in the morning, can actually sort of stop that spike throughout the day. I know for me, if I'm going to have a carbohydrate meal, I like the little trick of apple cider vinegar prior to the meal, or make sure I go for a walk post the meal. What are some things we can do? I guess I'm going to use the word biohacks.
Yeah. So a little bit of a walk, 30 minutes, hour after a meal is great. If you look at, I think the guy's name is The Mountain. He's a guy in Game of Thrones, the big guy. He always talks about walks after his meal. Very, very helpful. He processes the food much better. I'm a big fan of cold showers in the morning. I do at least 2-3 minutes freezing cold shower that activates the brown fat and really keeps your metabolism more revved up throughout the day. Also, I really lean on a higher ketogenic based meal. I try to really keep the carbs down in the morning. So I keep that fasting state from nighttime into a very low carb, high fat meal at breakfast. So I don't bring any carbs into my day until 2-3 o'clock. So I like that aspect of it. And then of course, any type of circuit training, interval training, Tabata training that really activates muscles, you're going to have like an increase in your resting metabolic rate 24 to 48 hours after movements like that.
Awesome. And you touched on your morning there. What would a sort of morning breakfast and a morning routine look like for you?
So morning routine would be a 2-3 minute cold shower, followed by 20 grams of collagen and some coffee, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 tablespoon of MCT oil. And then from there, I'd sip that, get some red light therapy and maybe a little bit of whole body vibration. Start my day, typically going to be between 8 o'clock to 2 p.m. I'm going to try to get 10 to 12,000 steps while walking, either on my desk treadmill or I have a QB bike under my desk. So I try to get those levels of movements. When I'm talking to people like you, it's a little tough because I can't quite move around. It kind of messes up the audio.
I want to ask how important of this type of movement throughout the day, how important do you think it is? I know for me, I like, for instance, right now, I've got my standing work desk and I try and just sort of limit my exposure to sitting down as much as possible. I've got a lot of my clients who, you know, they might come in, they work out for an hour and then they're pretty sedentary for the rest of the day. How important do you think is constant moving, little things like standing up as much as possible? How crucial is that?
I think it's great. I think it's very important. I think it's really good for the spine because just sitting all day, you're really shortening your hip flexors, which are going to really create a lot of shearing force in the lower back. I think that's really big. And then I have a TRX, some kettlebells, and X3 bar. And so in between patients, I'll jump in and pick a movement to do for a minute and then get back to the next patient. So having things like that where you can do kind of like micro workouts during the day, a minute or two here and there, I think make a big difference.
Yeah, it sounds very similar. I've interviewed Ben Greenfield, who we touched on. He's very similar. He's got his hex bar, his trap bar deadlift all set up, and he would just randomly jump on and do a couple of reps in between sort of work outputs and that. Intermittent fasting.
Like that.
It's something I want to touch on. Is this something you experiment with at all?
So I try to always do at least the 12 by 12. And I try to always stack on a modified carbohydrate fast for at least that 16 hours, really keep those carbohydrates down every day. Now from there, if you're metabolically flexible and relatively healthy, could you throw in a couple times a week of intermittent fasting? Sure. I don't think it's necessary to do it every single day, because that kind of it, that's like being keto every single day. I think it's good to cycle in and out unless there's a lot of metabolic damage from, you know, type 2 diabetes, etc. And then in regards to that, some people aren't healthy enough to do it. They don't have enough metabolic flexibility. They have an active autoimmune issue. They have a thyroid issue. They have an adrenal dysfunction. They have blood sugar stability issues. And those people need to get healthy and then maybe lean into a 12 by 12, which I think most people can do every day. 12 by 12 being, you know, you stop eating by 7 p.m., maybe 7, 8 p.m., and then you don't eat again until 7 or 8 a.m. That's at least a good standard step.
And what is your advice for when it comes to actually breaking a fast? Is there certain guidelines that you should follow?
Honestly, for me, I always break it in the morning with something liquid just because I want to be able to move. I don't want to feel weighed down with a heavy breakfast. So I typically do either like collagen smoothie, or I do a coffee with the butter and the MCT oil and 20 grams of collagen amino acids that are in peptide form already broken down. That way I feel good. Okay. I get a lot of cognitive enhancement benefits through caffeine in the morning. So just a little bit, a good clean coffee. I feel like it really enhances my focus.
Awesome.
And then the fat also time releases the caffeine. So you don't get the caffeine hits you like a magic carpet ride. It's very gentle and just very, very progressive versus like an espresso shot. It's like, whoa, you're wired.
That's something I want to ask on. I know for me, I've often wondered, obviously just from research and all that, I'm aware that cortisol levels are high in the morning. So I've often wondered when's the best time for coffee, which is going to obviously amp up things. Is there a certain time you should be having coffee? And is it, you've obviously touched on, you like to go very early on in the morning. What's the reason behind this?
Yeah. So in the first 1 to 2 hours, I want it definitely done before noon. Ideally in the first 2 hours though, done, taking it with fat is going to time release the caffeine. So it will not hit you in a very stimulating way. It'll be very, very gentle. And then I typically use some type of an adaptogen throughout the morning and afternoon to modulate cortisol and stress patterns. So big fan of ashwagandha, love ashwagandha, use that. And big fan of B vitamins, ribose, creatine. So I'll use some of these nutrients to really upregulate mitochondrial function during the day. And of course, make sure I have it, like, you know, I just had lunch a little bit ago. I had a nice soup, grass-fed meat, some cut up vegetables, some peas, some carrots, nice broth, just a really simple meal. Awesome. So I just try to keep it like that. Nutrient dense, but easy.
Well, let's touch on, you mentioned a few supplements there. What is your supplement protocol like?
So it depends. I mean, in general, doing some kind of a high quality multi-support pack. And again, I have my own supplement line. So I try to procure from the highest vendors. You know, the supplement industry, it's like the fast food industry. You can buy crap stuff or you can get the grass-fed steak equivalent from the farmer down the street. So trying to buy from the best manufacturer quality-wise. So B vitamins are a must. High quality multi is a must. Tablespoon of cod liver oil, some ashwagandha. And then right now, because of all the coronavirus stuff going on out there, I'm doing a little bit more vitamin C. I'm doing some reishi medicinal mushroom to upregulate my immune system, a little bit of NAC and glutathione, and a little bit of astragalus.
Right. I love it. Adrenal health, obviously, let's talk about what are some certain things. So you said before that with adrenal health, you're not gonna get these clients intermittent fasting. They're gonna be wary of coffee and these kind of things. What are some steps you're taking to sort of get them back to a ground level where they can start to implement some of these things? So where does it all? What's the foundation? What do they have to sort of? What steps to take?
So first off, food's got to be nutrient dense, anti-inflammatory, low toxin. We tend to lean a little bit more on the lower carbohydrate side, but it depends, right? If I'm dealing with an ectomorph, someone that has a more leaner body type, more metabolically flexible, we may make tweaks and do a little bit more carbohydrate with their meal, maybe a serving of starch, potato squash, carrots, plantains. It depends. Some need a little bit. Some do better with less. But then the key is really having enough protein and fat at every meal. So we'll do at least a palm to a full hand of protein, a tablespoon or so of fat, if there's not enough fat in the protein source. And then we lean more on vegetables than starch, but then it just depends. Some people who have a lot of adrenal issues do better with a little bit of starch. So you really got to individualize it per patient.
And outside of nutrition, is there any lifestyle? What are the lifestyle practices you advocate? Is it mindfulness? Is it meditation? The importance of sleep?
Yeah, so sleep's important. It's probably the area that I probably struggle with the most. I get to bed around 11, between 11 and midnight. I try to sleep 7 to 8 hours. I use a bed jet at night to regulate body temperature, and I sleep on a grounding mat. I use red light in the morning. I really work on circadian rhythm. I do blue blocking. I got a special pair of glasses I wear at night for blue blocking just to really set the cortisol rhythm. And then during the day, I'm trying to get, you know, 15 to 20,000 steps a day, exposure to red light, micro dosing of exercising throughout the day if I'm busy and I don't have time. Because I have a family, I have two young sons, so it's the time that I normally spent on myself exercising is gone. So I try to micro exercise during the day.
Right. Is there any other, so the red light therapy, is there any other hacks you love using? I know the red light, the use sauna therapy is a big one. Cold thermogenesis, we've touched on that with the cold showers. Anything else out there?
Yeah, there's a device I use called the Newbie, which is a bioelectric device that can be very helpful to reduce inflammation, stimulate muscle growth, helps with injuries. I did a podcast on this recently about the Newbie. That's a great device.
Newbie. Okay. And the grounding mat, you touched on that. Is that
correct? Mm-hmm.
What's the
put that under my mattress pad, and that just disperses negative ions that accumulate throughout the day. And then also, I got three big monitors here. I invested in low blue light, low flicker monitors, and that makes a big difference too.
Right. On this podcast, in the project, I've touched a lot on women's hormone health, these kind of things. I actually want to flip it a little bit. I think you're the right person to do so. I want to talk about optimizing male performance and hormones. Obviously, testosterone is a very popular topic. What are some strategies? Is it, again, does it come back to optimizing sleep, reducing stress, adequate nutrition? I want to talk about optimizing male hormones though for a bit.
So in general, making sure your diet's solid. So lots of zinc, high quality selenium from really good whole food sources. That's really essential. So, you know, your meats, your vegetables, organ meats, these are all going to be really key sources of a lot of these minerals. Making sure you have good digestion. So if you don't have enough stomach acid, you may not be able to ionize and break down these minerals. And then if you have a gut infection or just you're stressed and maybe you have H. pylori or blastocystis hominis parasite, these things may be bottlenecks that prevent your stomach acid and enzymes from working well and from you being able to break down these nutrients. So make sure the nutrients are there. Make sure there's not impediments to break down these things and absorb them. And then after that, a lot of it's going to depend upon how busy or how stressed out your life is. And that's where specific supplements may help to kind of biohack and prevent you from burning the candle at both ends.
Just going back to the digestion side of things, how can we
go ahead?
Like, what are some warning signs? Is it is leaky gut? What are some signs there that we might have some sort of digestion issue, and what can we do about it?
Well, if you're not pooping at least at one stool, at least 12 inches every 24 hours or so, that's a problem. If you have bloating or nausea or acid reflux or indigestion after a meal, or lingering after a meal, excess flatulence, all those things can be a big sign that something is going on in the digestive area.
And how can we improve this?
Oh, also there's atypical stuff. There's atypical symptoms are going to be brain fog, fatigue, those kind of cognitive things as well. So it just depends. You got to look at the food. You got to look at the digestion. So kind of in my functional medicine world, I see patients all over the world, right? And in my world, we have a 6-hour approach in how we address this. So the first R is we remove the bad foods. And again, that's individualized per patient. I see a lot of sick patients with autoimmune conditions. Then it gets a little more strict. Second R is replacing enzymes and acids, because you got to have the digestive support, enzymes, acids, bile salts to break down these nutrients. Third R, repairing the gut lining. If there's gut lining integrity issues, we may have to give extra nutrients to calm that and support that, as well as repair the hormones, because the hormones help with the immune function, leaky gut, and inflammation. The fourth R is removing the infections. We do that a little bit later on, because you have to have everything stabilized for that to happen, because it can be a little bit of a stressor. Fifth R, repopulation, reinoculation with good bacteria. Sixth R is going to be retesting to ensure whatever we were going after infection-wise is clear.
Awesome. I absolutely love it. You covered a few things I want to touch on there about infection, those kind of things. Just lastly, the importance of starting off your day. I know we've included the cold shower, those kind of things. Is gratitude journaling anything like this part of your day? And how important is it, do you think, to set the tone very early on?
Yeah, I think some of the Wim Hof breathing and different breathing techniques can be helpful. And I think really just practice mindfulness, good belly breathing, while you focus on everything that you are grateful for. You know, so you got to put that energy out there. And if you don't have a sense of gratitude and appreciation for what you have in your life, it's hard to manifest more.
That's great advice. Very, very powerful message to finish off on. I won't take up any longer, Justin. I want to say again, a huge thank you. You're a massive inspiration of mine. You're a wealth of knowledge, and you really do great things for the world. So I really appreciate you jumping on, being a part of it.
Thanks so much, Chad. I really appreciate it.